Yes, here we are back again after collecting a lot of questions. We would like to ask them to Henning. And we got a lot of different questions which go on different fields you talked about. And the first one I got here is a question, why children are more happy to go to school in Denmark?
Well, I think that for some historical reasons and maybe some wider cultural reasons, teachers tend to treat children as real human beings and not very authoritarian, with influence from what we call reform pedagogy, free pedagogy, and also a historical background in the liberal social movements of peasants and small peasants. There has been this idea about free dialogical teaching and being together in the schools. So mm-hmm. I think that's the reason.
Okay. Regina, what question do you have?
Yes, there is one question to our interview, and there is the questions regarding the international cooperations in the ESREA network. Perhaps you can tell us who participate in this network, and yes.
Well, the ESREA organization is organized mainly as 9 or 10 thematic networks. They organize their own work. They meet regularly. Some meet every year. Some meet every second year. Some have some other collaborations than just being there. But the basic activity is to come together and discuss within this theme of research what colleagues are doing. And there is no money and there's no hierarchy. There's not very much fighting about the arena, the control of the scene. So it's usually quite nice, concentrated work occasions. And then people, of course, develop wider networks and doing some, maybe apply for some projects together, but mm-hmm. with this basis. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's open for every adult educator,
yeah.
For every researcher in adult education.
Yes, it's even so open that you can participate in a single activity without being a member. But then, of course, we hope that you become a member afterwards, which means that you pay a small fee and then you receive information and so on. It's easy to find information about ESREA. It is, has a website which is just called esrea.org, O-R-G. Mm-hmm. And then you can find all information about activities, membership, and mm-hmm. it's open for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have got some questions regarding the validation of competences. Mm-hmm. There is, for example, the question concerning the NAICT competences you talked about. Mm. You described the 6 competences, for example, the future needed competences, mm-hmm. But not how to achieve them and how do adults learn them. Mm. And maybe you can say a few more words about how to measure and value and how they can be achieved.
Mm-hmm. Yes, as I said, I think it's a precondition for development of lifelong learning support systems that you build out guidance and you make systems of validation and recognition of prior learning. But then I would also take the attention to the fact that this is being done in very different ways, and some are better than others. For example, in France, you have quite early, there, because of a relatively complex credit system, employers have established a system for assessing people's competences, which was employer-driven and was meant to support the selection of labor force and the recruitment of adequate skills. So this is, of course, very closely related to existing needs of existing companies in the way they perceive themselves, right? Mm-hmm. You have the development of national framework systems, for example, in Britain, which has many similarities, but still having an attempt to standardize and get the system beyond the individual companies' levels and so on. But I think there is still a big need to develop systems which recognize social experiences in an adequate way, and which can translate between, say, academic merits, which are obtained in an academic system, crafts merits, work merits, and the skills you acquire if you run a sports club. I mean, a lot of people learning a lot from doing work in their leisure activities. They learn a lot of organizational skills. It has to be translated. So I cannot say how, but mm-hmm. I can say it's a question about new languages and new concepts of competence and knowledge.
Mm-hmm. But there are no concrete efforts to validate them?
Well, I think every country has one, mm-hmm. More or less developed, because it's becoming a need. But they are very different. In Denmark, for example, the Ministry of Education has just launched something which is called real competence recognition. That is a very ambitious project where they intend to teach a lot of people who are the teachers and counselors and guides in adult education institutions, how to carry out an assessment of people's competences and translate it into some kind of relevant credits for further education, practically by setting up a plan for their learning, departing from their already obtained competences and their desires for future career. So it's a kind of career guidance, measurement, mm-hmm. and development of plans in the same exercise. Mm-hmm. And this was just launched. The name is the same as having been used by the Norwegian. Mm-hmm. Norway has been underway for 3-4 years, I think, with the same notion of, in our language, real competence means, in the one place, something which is real, not formal, mm-hmm. But also real in the sense that it works. It is something that can be used. Mm-hmm. And the Norwegian system, it's already a lot of experience in that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think it was in the same connection you were talking about the competences. You were talking about commodification.
Yeah.
You give a short explanation, but there was a question if you could explain it more detailed. What does it actually mean?
Yeah. Well, I think commodification. It's an English word meaning transferring something into a commodity, into something that can be sold or markets exchanged in a market. And it means several things. One is that in order to be a commodity, you must be able to specify the quality and the quantity. So you need to define modules or entities which can be easily identified. It's impossible to trade something which is well, we don't know what. For this reason, one of the aspects of commodification is to shape education and training into such entities that they can be defined. This has a price, namely that something which is too comprehensive or too undefined is not easy to define in the market. The other aspect is the more social arrangement. Do you have to buy it, or is it something you get for free? Is it a right, or is it a where commodification means that education and training is being sold in the market? Whereas you could say that in the development of nation states, most nation states have been concerned about securing a certain level of citizenship, a certain level of knowledge and skills. This is to some extent now being individualized.
Yes, next questions are regarding the industrialization process in Denmark. Mm-hmm. There is a question if it would be problematic to get the people from the agriculture sector into the city and how they get motivated to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they got motivated in more or less the same way as the rural population in England came to the cotton mills and the factories in the 17th century, namely by poverty. There was no work in the countryside, and at least not very good work. And making this comparison, then of course you should also say that poverty is relative. The rural population in Denmark mostly did not suffer from starvation, but was actually relatively poor. And there were the prosperity just around the corner and the possibility to get a better life. So this is a very strong motivation. But at the same time, you have to realize how big this transformation is. There is a funny thing that if you look where the people who came from agriculture and fishery, where they went in the first generation, then you find them in transport and in construction. They didn't want to come into factories. So people who are not urban, who are not used to work inside, in fixed social pattern, fixed time, mm-hmm. they try to avoid it, even though they go to the cities, or they work in construction sites and transport. So just as an indicator how big this shift was, which means, of course, that they needed to learn not just how to drive a truck or how to make concrete, but they need to learn a new way of working.
Yes. Our next questions are, in the view of the policy of adult education, mm-hmm. or for adult education, I have two more general questions. Mm-hmm. The one is, what is the specific Danish policy on lifelong learning? And the more specific is, if there is a policy in adult education in rural regions.
Yeah. The first one, you could say that I think if there is any specific Danish policy about lifelong learning, then it would be the one of the strategy for providing for low-skilled workers. That is specific. The other ones are adaptations of policies which are all over and necessary to do that. So my point was in a way to say that the policy may be more or less sensitive to the resources you already have in the education system or in the population or in the organizations around adult education, the professional groups, but it has some similar aspects. And then in this sense, the resources are in the past. they need to be used. The other question you mentioned, there is no rural population in Denmark anymore, really. Mm-hmm. Denmark is an urban country in the sense that the life styles, the patterns of life are more or less shaped by urban patterns and very homogenous. I think also much more homogenous than, for example, Germany.
Yeah, there's another question concerning the policy, and that is migrant, if migrants are also beneficiaries of the education for mm-hmm. all provision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good question. No, not very much. I just said, and that was maybe too early, that the population in Denmark is very homogeneous, because actually I think Denmark has a more segregated subculture of immigrants than many other countries. This, I cannot go very deep into explanation of this, but it has something to do with some of the weaknesses of the welfare state policies of say social democrat regimes, that they have been the state has been very eager to treat people well, to give them the rights and the benefits which the rest of the population would have, but at the same time put them into reservations, literally in the form of camps, or in the form of having the opportunity to survive with your old culture and social patterns unchanged. So the segregation, the integration has not been as strong in Denmark as they have in Germany, for example, or in most other countries, for good and for bad. So they benefit from the offers, but not as much as the Danish, the ethnic Danish or the original Danish population.
I have two questions now, which are also, I think, from a very German point of view. Mm-hmm. It's the questions about the institutional structures of education in Denmark, mm-hmm. and if there are learning regions. Yeah. We have in Germany learning regions, and I think it would be very interesting in a small country mm-hmm. like Denmark, mm-hmm. how you are doing it there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have learning regions, but this policy of learning regions has not been as influential in Denmark as it has been in many other countries. I think maybe because the idea of regionality is not very strong in such a small country with short distances. And so that is to say that, and maybe it has also to do with the structure of welfare state, we have had more like national systems, which were segregated from each other's labor markets, regulated training, mm-hmm. folk high schools. What is in German called folk high schools is something different than Danish. Danish are residential. But we also have general adult education similar to Volkshochschulen in German sense. And they have been relatively segregated systems, so the regional interaction has been lower. It's changing lately, and I think mainly by the fact that the engagement of institutions outside school bring them together. Mm-hmm.
The next question is again from the German point of view, as quality management and certification is a discussion at the moment. Is it a topic in Denmark as well?
The what I refer to about the school discussion is a discussion about evaluation and quality management, and the big discussion is whether you which means you should bring. You could say about school that the primary quality management of Danish schools has been the teachers. Educating good teachers, offering very good continuing education for teachers has enabled some kind of relatively homogeneous school system where the teachers were responsible for quality. Now you could say that the present political situation is that politicians do not trust teachers to take care of quality. So they implement new systems of quality management and quality control, for example, national tests. This is a real hot issue between the teachers as a profession and, say, a majority of political representatives. And just in the present previous election, we had election, general election in Denmark last week, it was a big issue, and the big Social Democrat Party changed their mind in this question during the election campaign. So it's very much discussed.
Mm-hmm. So we have two last short questions. The one is very concrete. Maybe you can say something to it. The question is, if you know if Denmark will participate in the PIAAC project for the assessment of adult learners' competencies.
Yes, I think so.
Yes.
And the next question, the last question, is regarding to what you told in your presentation, but it's also looking forward to the presentation we have in 2 weeks, as the representative of Finland will be here. Mm-hmm. And you said that Finland is you different from Scandinavia. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Is Finland not part of Scandinavia?
Well, it is. It's not such a tricky question as it is with the Scotch and the Welsh, where you have to be real careful about British and English and UK and so on. That's not the case by us. It's relatively peaceful. Scandinavia is historically the three countries: Norway, Sweden, and Denmark. The Nordic countries include Finland, Iceland, and some minor self-ruling areas. We tend to mix the two things up because Finland has become very similar to the three original Scandinavian countries, and Iceland is, after all, quite small and far away. So if somebody, you will very often hear that Finland is a Scandinavian country. And it was not so in the Cold War period, where Finland was balancing and trying to also keep up very close economic relations with the Soviet Union. But especially later, it has been very clear that mentality, policies, social structure, and so on is quite similar to the other mm-hmm. countries. But when we talk about school, I mean, we are talking about long waves, long cycles. So I think it has there is a difference which has to do with this late adaptation to certain of the Scandinavian countries' development. Mm-hmm.
So then we can say hello to a Scandinavian in 2 weeks again,
or
no?
If it's a Finnish, he or she might think that that this is a Nordic country.
Okay. Okay. Yes. Do you have another question? No. Would you say the last word?
Yes. I think it was an interesting perspective today into Denmark, into the country of Denmark, and what you are doing there in adult education. And I think for us it was something new to learn to differentiate. If Finland will be there, then we will be more aware about this in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we would like to thank you now for your presentation.
Thank you for your question and conversation, and thank you, all of you, for your patience and support for our discussion.
Yes. At last, we would like to invite you in 2 weeks again. There we will have our Finnish colleague, Eero Panta. He will talk about the trends in adult education in Finland. And then we will see in German time at 4 o'clock in 2 weeks again. Thank you. Thank you.